live from the Ghost Hunter Store. Brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Hi everybody, welcome to the show. I get my heart start to beating again because I thought we weren't going to connect. Marty's here with me as usual.
Good evening, everyone.
This week we have a special guest, Reverend Amy Long from the Universal Life Church Seminary.
Hello.
Still there, good. That's a bonus.
Wow, we're doing good.
All right, so far we've completed the normal hurdles. We've got over them. So we're doing good. All right. For those of you who don't know, I was on a journey for, I guess since I was like 14 years old, attempting to go to seminary. I talked to my parish priest. I was brought up Episcopalian. That didn't work out. Many other obstacles have been thrown in my way, whether they were spiritual or negative or however you want to, you know, put them. But finally, after my sixth bypass, unexpected massive heart attack, I was able to overcome that those hurdles, and the Universal Life Church was the place I had been probably stalking for years, but that's the place I decided to go. I really didn't know what to expect, but I've been very, very pleasantly surprised, and now I'll let Amy do some of the pitching herself of the whole thing, so... thank you very much first off, Amy, for coming on.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. Excited.
If you could give us a little history first of, not only the seminary, but of the Universal Life Church,
because there's a lot of... in 1959, Kirby Hensley, he was a Baptist and he was into very religious, and he decided that everybody is ordained, whether they know it or not. Everybody has the right to follow their own path and pursue their own truth. So he decided to create the Universal Life Church and said that anyone can be ordained for free. This, of course, caused a lot of controversy and a lot of people having issues with it, and he went through a lot of court battles, and there were a lot of people who said, oh, this is just a tax dodge, and of course there are going to be people who are going to use it that way. But that really wasn't its intention, and most people are not very effective at trying to dodge any taxes. That doesn't make any sense. So he decided that people can become ordained, and he came up with the Universal Life Church with the idea of do no harm, and that to do that which is right. And as long as it doesn't infringe on the rights of others, then you're free to pursue it. So he started it in 1959. He had it as a mail order thing for a long time, and then a number of years later, along came the internet, and that started off with the ulc.org, run by Daniel Zimmerman. He was running it supposed to be for the headquarters, and then after a while, he called his the monastery, and after a while, his views, shall we say, differed from things that the headquarters decided to that they wanted to be about. So they said, well, we're going to put up our own website because they didn't really care for some of the things Daniel was putting. So they started their own site, ulchq.com. Sometime in there, ulc.net, the bookstore, they opened up a website as well, and all the ordinations from those sites were being sent to headquarters. Then, let's see, then I got connected with Daniel, not knowing what was going on there, and after working with him for a little while, I realized that that ministers needed more training. It wasn't enough to just become ordained and say, go about your merry way, because, you know, frankly, people laughed at that. They said, oh, you're not a real minister, you're just ordained, you just filled out a couple lines, what does that mean? And I said, gee, you know, people need to know how to do things. They need to learn how to be ministers, and they need some support. They need to have a place to go to ask questions and to talk about things and to share ideas and learn things. So I started the ULC seminary about 7 years ago, and I started teaching classes, and I've done about 700 weddings myself, so I said I know enough about weddings just to tell other people about it. So I started teaching people how to do ceremonies and funerals and all the other kinds of ceremonies, and then came up with classes, and it's just kind of been growing from there. And that's kind of where we are today, just sending out classes and different types of things.
When you first got involved, you got involved just as being an ordained minister yourself?
Yeah, I had gone through a seminary, a separate seminary. It was actually a psychic seminary, clairvoyant training program, back in 1989. And after I was a minister for a while, they were changing their policies, and they wanted to charge their ministers $250 a year to keep their license current. And I said, geez, I just paid all this money to go through their program, and I've done all this tithing, and I've spent all this time and everything else, and then they want to charge me just to keep my license active? That annoyed me. So that's where I sought out the ULC, because I said, geez, I can just get ordained here, and it's good for life. So I became ordained through the ULC.
I know, I think my ordination was about, I guess, 10 years ago. So, and mm-hmm. I never really did anything with it. And probably, again, it was one of those things that seemed so easy to do. And
right.
There was no, but beyond that, there was nothing really to do with it. So I kind
exactly.
of, I also never, I guess I took it seriously, but never really did anything with it. It wasn't until I found, you know, the seminary that you're running and saw all the classes that I became like the cyber stalker, always looking at the classes, wondering, you know, could this be something? Ultimately, the way I finally decided was I did apply at other seminaries. But mm-hmm. at this point, I'm 44 years old. This point in my life.
Hey, me too.
I wasn't, wow. Coincidence.
We're twins. My long lost brother.
I had a career, another job. There was no way I could go away anywhere. My beliefs, while my parents were brought up as Catholic, they broke away from that. I was brought up as Episcopalian. My beliefs didn't quite fit into that either. You know, I consider myself maybe like a Christian, but I have wide open beliefs to a lot of other religions too. And by looking all around and talking to other, you know, schools and everything, I kept coming back to the ULC seminary. It was the only one that fit. And now having been enrolled and taking the classes, I realize how much of a perfect fit that I probably should have done this a lot sooner.
Well, people often don't know. And what I find with a lot of our ministers is that they have, their beliefs don't quite fit into mainstream religions. I mean, there are some people who are, you know, absolutely one thing and that's it. But more than that, I see people who, well, they're Christian, but they also, you know, have read the teachings of this, you know, that, and, you know, they've read all the different things, and they see the truths that exist in other religions as well. And so along the same lines you're talking about, there's a lot of things to be learned from all the different religions, and you can claim one and still recognize the truths in others. And so my design is to present as many truths as possible from different sources so people can form their own opinions and values and such.
Now, I know when people ask me they always want to know what kind of seminary you're going to. I usually describe it as like a non-denominational interfaith.
Exactly.
Is mm-hmm. that a good description?
Multi-faith, interfaith, non-denominational. Technically speaking, a lot of people don't know this, but ULC is its own denomination. It was designated a denomination years ago. So you can say, what denomination are you? ULC. That's considered the denomination.
Well, so normally the conversation leads into, well, how did you get ordained and all that? And they find out it was online and you were ordained first and then you take the classes. And there's no guarantee you have to take the classes. So, yeah, they kind of look at you a little funny. But I think, you know, after I explained some of the courses, and I guess I probably was going in not knowing really what to expect. But maybe sure. my bar was set a little low. And having now taken some of the courses, I know that I majored in history when I was in college. And I specifically in world religions. I now know more about the world religions and the history of even like Christianity than I ever did by taking any of the college level courses.
Oh, that's great to hear.
So
well, the person who wrote our comparative religion course teaches it at a college level.
These are definitely college level courses. These are they're at that level, and the way they're presented, you know, some of them are more difficult than others. Some of them are easier to read. Some of them are more like textbook reads. But I'm getting a lot more out of them. I don't necessarily think it's because the time in my life now I'm more open. I thought maybe, okay, that's it. But even some of the things that I wouldn't normally, you know, be as interested in now, I'm still finding them that I know what I learned years ago. This is going a lot deeper than those college courses did. So that was really nice and surprising for me because now I feel more confident, I guess. And when I talk about it too, I kind of let everyone know this isn't, you know, I guess everything's what you make of it.
Yeah. Exactly. What you get out of it, what you put into it. And part of the whole seminary idea is because people say, gee, you're ordained online, what does that mean? Well, you can sign up and be a seminary student. You can say, I'm an ongoing seminary student. And you can say that because whether you're taking classes or not, because we do send out samples and readings and other information for seminary students that you don't have to pay for. So you can still get some training even if you don't have the money for it or you're not ready to yet. You can still get samples and tastes of everything, and we have some sample mini courses and, you know, lots of things that are available for people who want to learn but maybe aren't quite ready to take a class yet or aren't in a position to. So I like to give a lot available and teaching available just for anybody who's interested.
I think that
sounds great because that gives you you can do all that reading and decide which direction or which direction you want to go in instead of just taking a bunch of different courses and not using any of them.
I know for me personally, that was probably what finally put me over because I was getting the emails too, and that you have the emails like the Sunday school lessons, and even your little motivational emails that you send out. Sometimes they hit just at the right time. And I'm like, well, she's in my head, you know, how did she get there? You know, it's like, so it definitely, it was almost like it was meant to be. It was meant for me to take this route. And I don't know. I can't thank you enough for putting it out there, really, because
it pleases me to know that.
One of the reasons why I wanted to get you on the show, too, is so to make it more aware, especially the people, you know, me and Marty, one of our other students is sitting here too. I think she wants to remain anonymous though, but she's listening in. But she's one of my paranormal researchers too. There's a lot of people who do this stuff, and this is perfect for kind of what we were dealing with. We deal with a lot of people who are in need of assistance, but they're in need of spiritual guidance. We're dealing with spirits.
You know? Right.
So a lot of the courses enable me to talk to people, especially taking the different religions, some of the religions I'm not as familiar with, because we deal with people from across many faiths, when I can sit down and talk to them on their level and with that little bit of training on how to, like the grief counseling, things like that, that makes it, you know, a huge deal. I mean, it makes a huge difference as opposed to how I used to deal with it. I've seen just, you know, probably in the past year, the way I handle the same exact cases. Mm-hmm. I'm handling from a different perspective now. And I'm seeing better results just coming from that spiritual side that I basically just didn't have the knowledge or training or any kind of guidance on.
Excellent. That's the goal is to, even if it's just some knowledge, it's much easier to talk to people when you have some idea of where they're coming from. I hear about people want to come and they say, well, I want to preach, but I only want to learn this type of, you know, this study. Well, how are you going to talk to people who come from all these other faiths if you have no idea what they believe? A lot of times there's more similarities than there are differences. They just have different names. Yeah. And if you want to call it sacred ground or, you know, or having a circle, you know, you can call it different things. You can create a circle. You can have a sacred ground. You can have, you know, different things that you want to call it. It's the same thing. So it's just terminology. And if you understand that they're the same thing, you can just say, like, kind of like this, and they'll go, oh, okay. And then all of a sudden, you guys are on the same side because you're talking the same language. And then they're more likely to open up to you and, you know, be receptive of whatever it is that you're sharing.
They get more comfortable with us sitting there talking to them and understanding that we know what they're going through instead of just saying we know what they're going through.
Right, because no one ever really knows what someone else is going through.
Right.
We just had an interesting case, actually. It was the one up in, I don't want to say the town. I'm trying to think so you guys would know. Where the guy was already writing books about.
Yeah, okay.
He was felt he was being persecuted by demons from a house in Georgia. He was moving up here. He was looking for help. He sought out every denomination he could find. And he was recommended to us by a Roman Catholic bishop that I know, that I worked with, and he talked to me. Now, this guy was, probably had the Bible memorized backwards and forwards and knew a lot of stuff, but knew it from just the one point of view.
Yeah, but the words.
Right, he knew the words. Yeah. He didn't necessarily understand the meanings.
Right.
Just what I had learned so far and doing, you know, additional studies through, because a lot of the courses, there's so much other stuff you do attached to them, like little links they take you to and other pages to read, that the course can be as small as you want it and as large as you want it, depending on how much you want to learn. And I always want to learn as much as I can. I was able to sit down with him and actually go almost like toe-to-toe back and forth with quoting, you know, while he was throwing Bible verses at me. I could almost translate it into English for everyone else.
Yeah.
But in English...
Great.
Everybody that was there who had different belief systems could all understand what exactly he was saying. And I think some of the things that he was saying, he didn't realize he was saying. Some of the things he was going on, he didn't realize where they come from, why they were
No, he took
important.
A different understanding to a couple things, yeah. Definitely.
So it kind of helped, you know, illuminate some things for him, mm-hmm. which again...
How did it go with the case? Did you resolve whatever was haunting the guy?
He's what we call, I won't say lost causes. He's so trapped in his own, he's built the cage he's trapped in. He's caught.
So maybe the voices are not in the house, but perhaps in his head?
You know what, there's probably a chance it's half and half. Mm. There seem to be other stuff going on, but he's so caught up in it and so, enthralled,
he's
really.
He's fed too much into it. He's just fed it. He's made it grown to into something that it shouldn't have been. He did that.
Mm. So... You almost have to... He wrote books about it and was writing books that he felt was being, you know, the knowledge was...
Channeled?
Channeled from God. He said Jesus a few times, angels. But I said, you're talking about writing a book about helping people in similar situations, but you haven't helped yourself yet. You're stuck in your same situation. So how about we put these books on the shelf? I'm not telling you not to write your books, but you can't write a how-to book when you haven't figured out how to. So put them in a safety deposit box, stop writing them. All he saw that as me trying to steal his thunder and stop him from writing a book. He moved on to another group which then I worked with. He's now working with another priest. He went back to Roman Catholic now. But he, from Jehovah Witness through Mormon, through every denomination of Christianity, he's hit pretty much every church and from Georgia to Pennsylvania where he's lived.
And sounds like there's not going to be a solution.
No, he's one of those people that he's trapped within his own trap. And until he can see clearly of that, actually look outside and stand outside and look in, be the observer and see where what he's done, he's so far entrenched in it. And he would feel such a loss to the suddenly end that he would wind up bringing it back anyway, which is an unfortunate side effect with many of the cases we deal with. Especially the nasty stuff. You would think people wouldn't want anything bad to come back into their lives, but they were doing something to bring it in to begin with. They kind of missed that a little bit. So they
Well, same for schizophrenics. You know, they take the medication and it quiets the voices in their head, but then they get lonely.
And they stop taking the medicine, yeah.
We had a because guy they miss their friends.
We had a guy across the street from the store. That was his situation. They probably
but that's a lot of schizophrenics. It's better to have bad attention than it is to have no attention. And if you're used to having people talking to you in your head, and we all do, everybody, all of us have people talking to us in our heads. We just think it's us. And it's clear audience. You're hearing other people communicating to you. You just don't always know that that's what you're hearing. And some people think most everybody thinks they're talking. It's just, oh, I just had an idea, or, oh, I just... You know, I heard this idea in my head or something, and it's really somebody talking to them. And if they turned up the volume, they'd hear who it was. Mm-hmm. It's just some people, the volume's already on max.
Yeah.
And
the door's open.
that
revolving door.
Let's talk about too is how many people are diagnosed as schizophrenic or mental disorders, because of something like that, because doctors don't know exactly how to figure that out, but they have symptoms, but they don't have symptoms, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, honestly, we all do hear voices in our head. I know when I get guidance, that's what I call it. I call it guidance. I don't say, I heard a voice in my head that told me to, because that's automatically going to get you out.
It sounds crazy when you do it that way. But how many times have you said something? I was at a lunch with a friend today, and we were looking at the menu, and we were both just looking at it, and I said, she was trying to decide which side order to get, and I just said, I don't like the coleslaw. And she said, I was about to order the coleslaw, and then you just, right when I was thinking it, you said, I don't like coleslaw. And I didn't consciously hear her ask me about the coleslaw, but yet she was thinking it in her head, and I just kind of caught it. And I don't believe there are coincidences. I think that happens all the time. Just some people's volume is stuck on loud and the door is stuck on open with a big flashing neon light that says, come on in, the beer's free.
People who are, you're close to, friends, family, that's, you're more in tune with them anyway. So you're more likely to pick that up. Now we're going to have a lot of people scared. Because they're going to be thinking, oh my God.
How many people can say, all of a sudden they start singing a song and they turn on the radio and that same song is on the radio right around where they're singing it.
Yeah.
They just heard it before it was on. That happens all the time. Wear your tinfoil hat and you'll be fine.
My daughter often comes in and she'll ask a question or I'll answer a question before she asks it. She's like, get out of my head. I wasn't in. You put it out there.
Well, I always tell my kids that if they're in trouble, I'll hear them if they think about me loud enough. And there have been more than a few times where I just can't concentrate. And I go, let me call my daughter. And she's like, I've been waiting for you to call. This and this and this happened. And she says, I've been sitting here staring at the phone going, call me, call me, call me, call me, call me, call me, call me. I went, oh, that's what that was. Thank you. I was about to run into a wall.
Yeah, sometimes the message just doesn't come through clear enough, but you kind of still get the message.
Yep, and I'm sure enough, I called. Every once in a while I miss it, but most of the time when they're thinking hard about me, I'll call.
Where did you wind up getting all the courses for the seminary? Did you solicit people to write them, or did they volunteer?
Well, it started off with, I wrote the first one. I wrote Spirit Quest, and then I wrote the four Gospels course. And then after that, I said, well, let's see, we need a course on something else. And so the next couple of courses, the Wiccan course and the Dr. Metaphysics, I sought that them out. And after that, it just started taking on a life of its own. People just said, well, do you need, how about a course on this one? I said, do you know somebody? Well, as a matter of fact, I know, a professor who would love to write a course and blah, blah, blah. And so pretty soon I've got people coming out of the woodworks just offering to do courses.
Because I noticed from when I first started checking the site out, I mean, the selection of courses is like, at least doubled since my first, peek at there. And then it seems like even, because I just signed up for two more last night, one I had never seen the biblical Egyptology.
The author of that course is, he's so into his topic. He says, well, we have to redo the whole thing. There's so many exciting things going on in Egypt. And I'm like, in biblical Egyptology, there's great breakthroughs, but apparently it's a hot topic. So he comes up with, there's new things and new things to discover all the time, which I somehow find amusing. It's like there's been in the ground thousands of years.
When I was studying history in college, Egyptology was my favorite thing. So when I saw the course combining the two, it's like, oh, this is irresistible.
He has traveled to Egypt multiple times to gain information, though. So his comes right from the source.
That's awesome.
So it is interesting. I have several more courses waiting to go out. I just haven't had time to review them, format them, and put them out yet.
The comparative religion one, I think out of all the ones I've taken so far that were in the process, the comparative religion one was the one that totally... I'm glad I took that one as one of my first ones. Because that's the
She's amazing. She's the one, she teaches that one at a college level. Like I said, it took her a long time to put that course together because she really put a lot of work into it.
I'm seeing other nods here. So someone else here is... our anonymous student has taken that course too. Because we were actually talking about, I didn't know that she was taking the courses too. And she talked about how we were going to go to, if I wanted to go with her to some of the other religious services. We're still planning that, you know, even though I finished the course, but I still want to go to. I've never been to a synagogue before. You know, she's more Wiccan, I guess. So she's been to some of the ceremonies I would love to actually be able to see, just to give me a really good point of view from every angle. It's different from reading about it and then actually going and participating are two different things. But that course was, you know, by far exceeded anything I expected. Having taken multiple classes like that in college, I kind of expected less, but I learned a lot more through that course. It covered the stuff in details and in ways that it was easy to remember, retain, and understand, which I guess is even more important than anything else.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. That's good to know. I'm sure she'll be, I'll make sure to let her know that. She'll be very pleased.
Long, that was
I've been trying to get her to write a second one, but the first one was, she said, was so much work, she hasn't had time for a second one yet. But she would like to have a more advanced one.
Interesting. There's one on like metaphysical healing, right?
Mm-hmm.
About miracles.
We have the prayer one and the metaphysics and miracles are both based on A Course in Miracles. They're by the same author.
So, I mean, even if you took just individual classes, I mean, there's a lot of just things
to
get out of them. It's well worth the time. And I like the fact that you can just take them at your, there's no pressure. There's no timeline.
No deadlines?
Yeah, it's like you do
it. No deadlines.
As you can do them. Because God knows if I had to finish it all in 24 weeks. You have Christmas, and for us being in the paranormal business, you know, we run the Ghost Hunter store, Marty's my store manager. So, like, our Christmas starts in September because everyone's getting their stuff for October events. And then it doesn't slow down until January. So we have, like, the elves, everything ramp up early for us. So it's like that just gets crazier and crazier. So, like, between, like, November and December, I don't think I was able to really get anything, even reading done, let alone answering emails or anything else. But it was easy to go back and then just sit down one day and just catch all right back up again with no pressure of, you know, having to have anything done by a certain time.
I've had people say, turn things in a year afterwards, and they say, well, you know, I had a bypass, and then my dog died, and then my sister was in the hospital, and then I had a baby, and then, you know, just, you know, one thing after another has come up, and they say, well, now I'm getting ready to do it. Can I still send it in? I said, absolutely. Anytime.
That was one of the other things that looking at a lot of the other seminaries that had online options, it was at their pace. And you either, and some of, most of them actually even still required on-site visits, where it was like the least amount I found was it was a mandatory two-week visit at the end of like each whatever they considered semester. So that was going to be at least, I guess, a total of 8 weeks through the two-year course, and everything was on their timeline. You missed something, you were a week behind, and you had to play catch-up. There was no time for real life.
I have found that this, especially this last year or so, people's lives have gotten so complicated. Maybe it's the anticipation of the 2012, but I've had people say so many things have gone on just with the economy and with, you know, jobs and health and life and whatever, just saying, I really want to do this and that, and so many things have gotten in the way. It's just, it's been kind of crazy, so figure people have lives, I have lives, a life, and things happen, and I can't always get to everything, and that's how it is sometimes.
Now, since you mentioned the magic number 2012,
yeah.
Can we get your take on
just what you need?
What's your, I have to ask everybody.
Well, you know, I don't think when they talk about, okay, it's the end of the world, it's not really. There's the Mayan calendar also, as I understand it, has another. There's another calendar that goes much farther beyond that one. But there could be spiritual changes that happen at that time, or it could just be nothing. And if the world is going to end, then what are we going to do about it? why stress over it? That means I saved a lot of money for retirement for nothing. But
I don't plan on Christmas shopping this year until, you know, the 22nd.
You what?
I might not have to Christmas shop, so I'll just save all that extra money.
That's right. We'll wait till right near the end. But I think there's been a lot of spiritual changes that have been going on. A lot of people seem to be coming to a point of awakening in ways that they hadn't before. That's what I've been noticing just people are changing their attitudes and their feelings. And I think there's going to be, after whatever happens in 2012, there's just going to be a new outlook on the world. People are going to be open more. And I don't think it's going to be a magical day where something happens. I think it's things that have been leading up to it already. I've already seen changes. You know, that's one of the reasons I started doing sending out the kind words, which I've been doing for almost 2.5 years now. I send out the, you know, the motivational ones. I send out once a week. And it's just people have said that they seem to come at the right time, and how do I know? And people joke and say, do you have a camera in my house? Some people get genuinely paranoid that I'm watching them, which I think is amusing.
Well, there's a couple times, you hit way too close to home with some of those emails. I started looking around.
My feeling is that I send out things that I want to hear, and it just so happens I'm not alone. So I write them, and I send them to myself, too, and then I read them and go, yeah. So other people get them, too, and they say, how did you know? And it's like, well, because everybody has a need to connect. And it can't just be me. So, I mean, they're not all going to hit right on, but I figure there's enough of them that do I have had a few people just recently. I had somebody who thought I was, you know, coming on to her husband. She wrote me a really nasty email, and I said, I think we have a misunderstanding. I don't know your husband. I'm sorry that she told me to, you know, go find my own man. I'm like, I got one. I'm good. Thanks. So it was kind of funny, and somebody else who told me it was inappropriate to send, you know, kind words to, you know, it was it was not of a ministerial nature or something. And I thought, wow, okay.
I just think based on what ministerial nature they're looking at.
Yeah. Who was their minister?
Yeah, exactly. It was improper, and I said, you know, it's like, gosh, I'll be happy to send them to her too if she's. I said, it just sounds like she's insecure. I'm happy to send them out to anyone who would like to hear some kind words. I thought that was kind of funny.
Doing something nice isn't something we expect, and I think it's hard because, you know, the society we've all grown up in, it almost stands out like it's something unusual. There's something, what's wrong with this lady? She's sending out these nice things to us that she doesn't know us. Kind of look at that,
yeah. Yeah. I think it's funny.
What do they want from us?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's that.
It's what?
Or
the what do they want from us for the kind words, you know?
Yes, one person had a whole big, long dissertation about what's wrong with me and that I'm so ego-driven that I'm trying to get something from someone. I said, all I did was say something nice. I didn't ask you to buy anything. I don't want you to buy anything. I just want you to have a nice day. Not quite sure where you're coming from.
I think some people, I mean, we're hardwired almost that way to be suspicious just by the way we were raised. And especially coming from, you know, I know people always talk about like organized religion, and people aren't fans of organized religion. That's where they, you know, where they have a problem with religion altogether. They don't realize that religion and organized religion can be two separate things. It's a belief system. It doesn't have to be. Everything you were taught by one denomination or one person doesn't necessarily mean that's the truth of everything out there. And I can almost see that kind of like how my parents might respond to something, some of those emails. Because they were both raised Roman Catholic, and it was, they were South Philadelphia. It wasn't an option of whether you were going to church. It was like you were going to church and that was it. It was militaristic. You know, you didn't have a choice.
It's a matter of what are you going to wear when you're going to church.
My mom went to Catholic elementary school, Catholic high school, and it wasn't until she had me that she wasn't able to go to, she moved to, you know, New Jersey. She wasn't able to go to work anymore. She was looking for something to do. She figured, hey, we got this big family Bible sitting around. Let me read it. And she started reading through, and she started having questions. So she went to her local priest, the Monsignor, and he told her, don't worry about what's in the Bible. We'll tell you anything you need to know. Just ask us. And right away, that all of a sudden, it's like, okay, I need
ding, 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 ding. Problem.
I think now that may have made her more suspicious of other places. Because I know I've seen when we went to the Episcopal churches, they tend to have a lot of turnover rate with priests. So there's a lot of new priests, and you can see that the older people looking at them with a very skeptical eye. They, I mean, they were almost, they really grill them, put them through, like, you know, the spot. They put the little light on them, where were you the night of January 12th? You know, they really grill and hard questions, want to know everything about these people, because should they have some sort of weird belief system that, you know, doesn't fit with what they know is supposed to be this faith? We just had one that the priest that just left her church, he came and saw me when I was in the hospital after my heart surgery. And we were just talking, and I was talking about how something I had wanted to do. I think he's the first person to put it, the thought back into my head again. But he was telling me about how he does, like, all these Celtic chants and all these Celtic type ceremonies and rituals prior to his Sunday Mass and any of the healing services. I'm like, you better not let my mom or any of the vestry know about this, okay? Because then you'll be, like, on the fast train out of town, okay?
The congregation will be hanging them on the way in.
It's like, that does not fit with it. I mean, to me, there's no contradiction. But, like, to
no, not at all.
They don't see it that way. I thought that was great. And I thought that was great that he was able to tell someone he just met that he wasn't afraid to just, like, share that. That was, like, wild. Because he was older than me anyway. So it's like, I'm used to, you know, not seeing that openness from an older priest. And that was very, that I think was kind of like a little more, even more motivation that, hey, I might be on the right track here doing this.
Well, I the more you leave yourself open to things, the more information that's going to come in, and then the big picture will become more clear. If you only know a little tiny piece of it, how are you going to see the whole thing? I just think it's like the blind people in an elephant. You know, they're all feeling different parts trying to describe what it is. Each of them has a different thing. Well, let's see. It's a tree trunk.
I'm going to write that one down because it's going to be one I got to use. You've had some paranormal experiences in the past or anything?
Well, all the time. Like I said, I went through, the seminary that I went through was a psychic seminary. So it was teaching people how to be clairvoyant. And so from going through that, I learned, and that's what a lot of the stuff I discussed in the Spirit Quest course are tools for protecting your space and owning your space and being the one who is senior in your body instead of just letting whoever, you know, filter through and go through and say whatever. And because of that and a number of other things, I've developed a sensitivity to it's just energies and, you know, people going on, and I've learned to read people a lot better and just sense what's going on. I mean, there was someone I had a connection with back east, and I'm in California, and we hadn't even spoken on the phone. I met him just once, but we had this really odd connection, and I could tell you, you know, when he had something wrong, I knew it. If he, I'd say, okay, I'd send him an email. What happened? Something's going on. And, you know, I just thought it was a little, you know, it was cool, but it was weird. And so I've had a lot of experiences like that. My dad had an experience in his office where I guess they had some ghosts who were there. And everybody saw them, but nobody said anything to anybody. Until finally one person said something, and they said, you've been seeing them too? And there was a father and a mother and a child back from probably turn of the century clothing, and they just hung out at the office. And then lots of people saw them. No one wanted to say anything, because God forbid.
I said, that's really cool knowing you come from that, because that's not something you expect either.
I have a lot of weird things. I've had, when I was 7, I broke my wrist. And I used to have a very large indentation on my left wrist, and which is great because I made me so I could tell my left and my right. But a couple years later, I went to a psychic surgeon, and he just took one look. He stuck his hand inside my wrist, which was weird, and he did something, and then my wrist was better, and the dent went away. It just was strange. My sister had, when she was 16, she had a rare blood disease, which was written up in the Stanford journals. It was called red blood aplasia, and it was very unusual for someone of her age to get it, and it was just a rare blood. They had no cure for it except to give her blood transfusions. Well, we went to our friendly neighborhood psychic healer, who gave her a number of healings, and she got better. And the doctors couldn't explain it, and they just wrote it down as a witch doctor. fixed it. They actually, they put that in the journal instead of witch doctor fixed her. So, yeah, I've had lots of experiences. It's been interesting.
The way you described the Spirit Quest course, that sounds like something that I could make mandatory for all my, investigators. We go through it. We get a little training on how to do psychic protection. And what we run into, the people, they don't realize that doing that type of protection is a way of life, not just something you would do before you go into an investigation. And they run into a lot of pitfalls and problems because they don't treat it as something that needs to be done every day, as a daily...
Record. Well, it's an ongoing... Have you taken the Spirit Quest course? I don't remember.
Not yet.
Not yet. Oh, you would love it. There's not the first two lessons, but three through, I think, nine, at least, all discuss psychic tools. How to ground, how to have a protection rose, how to be in the center of your head, how to replenish your own energy, how to rid yourself of other people's energy. Then there's lessons on how spirit communicates, the different means of communication, ways of getting a competition and getting out of competition. And that's the longest course. There's 30 lessons in that one. Because I just don't have a lot to say.
All this kind of stuff that we take a long time to teach the people. You know, each person has their own kind of, learning curve with it.
There's going to be lots of tools that you're going to want to have in your toolbox. You don't want to go wading into a situation without, protection.
That's another good analogy there, too. We bring our equipment with us, our electronics and everything else, but, like, you need to have your spiritual protection toolbox, too. Because some tools
absolutely
are good for some jobs, but not good for the other job. You need to have a variety.
Well, they're good for, spiritual tools are good for any time you are dealing with any other people. Just like, people say, oh, they were throwing daggers at me with their eyes. Well, they were. That's called throwing energy. And it can hit your aura, and it will put holes in your aura. And if you have holes in your aura that you don't fix, then your energy leaks out. And that's when people get sick, is if they've gotten the snot whacked out of them. There's a lot of other things like, with your chakras that people talk about. When people say they know something off the top of their head, that's their seventh chakra. That's your knowingness. That's your ability just to know things. That's your seventh chakra, and it's the crown of your head. That's knowing something off the top of your head. When people say they have a gut feeling, that's your second chakra, and that has your emotional gut responses, among other things. There's also the third chakra is where your energy center is, and your fourth chakra, people always talk about something being from the heart. Well, technically speaking, it's not. It's the fourth chakra, which is where your ability to connect with other people. And if you're going in and doing, paranormal investigations, you may have some of those beings that are either going to come in and plug into your crown, or they're going to plug into your heart, and they're going to want to go, oh, love us, and you go, what? We don't want to get rid of them. We just want to let them be here, when really you don't. You want them to help them move along.
See, I never even thought of that either, really. Marty does Reiki, a Reiki master. She does more of the teaching with the chakras and everything. But I never thought really of a spirit particularly targeting a certain chakra.
All the time. All the time. If somebody's in...
Plug in, where are you the weakest, even,
Where are you the most open, yeah.
At the most open, that makes a lot of sense for a lot of different things.
That's sure, and you might get bowled over. Someone might say, this person, they're trying to get us out of here, and you might find yourself walking into an event with a raging headache, and you don't know why you have such a headache, or your sinuses get clogged. And you say, God, I have such a sinus, there's so much pressure in my head. And you might thinking, maybe I'm getting a cold, or, my boyfriend had when I first met him, he said, oh, I get these terrible sinus headaches. And he just out of the blue, he'd grab his head and start, rolling on the ground. And I'm like, what happened? And he said, oh, it's just a sinus headache. The heck it was his ex-wife. Every time she'd think about him, she whacked him so hard in his head, he couldn't even see straight. And once I helped him learn how to move her out and how to just talk to her and keep her out of his head, he doesn't get, blinding headaches anymore. So it's a lot of times if it's somebody in your head, when you probably, with if you're investigating, you know, ghosts and other paranormal things, they're probably saying, hey, get out of here. Or they're saying, hello, 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 someone please talk to me.
Right.
Either way, if you don't know what it is, it's just going to come across as, oh, my God, my head hurts.
And that's something that's a very common symptom of some people, especially when they're first learning how to, like, that they are sensitive and psychic, because I believe everybody is.
I agree.
That they, that's one of the first things they have. They have the physical symptoms, and headache is one of the most common.
Well, with the Spirit Quest course, there are a number of tools in there. If you put up a rose and you ground yourself and you say hello to the center of your head and you say hello to the energy that's around you, and there's some tools for cleaning out that energy, you'll find yourself yawning and the energy dissipating. And then your head feels better.
Now, I got to ask, Erica, you took the Spirit Quest already?
I'm in the middle of it, yes.
Okay. She's nodding her head the whole time you're talking, so.
Oh.
She's in the middle of the course right now, so.
Oh, good.
It was nodding affirmatively on everything you said, so that's something that definitely, that's going to be what probably the next one I take. But that's something I might actually have more people that are, especially the ones that are having more difficult understanding. It might just be that, you know, sometimes the right person presenting it the right way makes it easier to understand, while someone else can say the same exact thing and it just doesn't click with them.
Exactly.
Just by the way, Erica was nodding her head.
Well, I try and make the course as conversational as possible. People have said reading that course is like talking to you, because I write like I talk, as far as I just put the point across, and it's pretty direct. And I found that people who take that one, if they don't use everything in it, if they just use a few of the basic tools, it can change a lot in their space. Just being able to ground, or just having an awareness of connecting yourself to the planet, means anything that's coming through you doesn't need to stick on you. It can just go right back down where it came from and go back out into the universe or whatever you want to do, but you don't need to have it sitting there.
If anything at all that we seem to be able to make stick, at least with our investigators, and to my knowledge, we're one of the few groups out there that actually does this, and then we offer classes from the store here now. But like the grounding, people do seem to get the grounding. And I'll see people doing it more and more, even when we're not on investigations, they just need to take that. I was on vacation and I had to go out. I walked into a candle shop that was supposedly haunted. Didn't think twice about it. I told my wife, I don't want to talk about ghosts with this lady, so, you know, don't mention what we do or anything like that. So I just want to go. I'm on vacation.
Good luck with that. How'd that work?
Didn't work out too
well. How long before she mentioned ghosts?
When I had to go outside after being in there for about 5 minutes, I actually turned around and I said, if you turn around, I'm on the ground, I'm okay. Just get me out, get me some air. Because the energy in there was so overwhelming and I wasn't prepared. It was like now trying to do all the grounding and protecting, it was too late. I literally had I walked outside and I had to go. I literally was out there holding onto this big oak tree trying to ground. You know, and it took me about 10 minutes. Then I drank a whole bottle of water before I went back in. But then going back in, I was very conscious of what I was walking into. Then I was fine. And then we got on the subject of half-hour conversation.
If you know ahead of time that it's going to be nasty energy, then you can ground the room before you go in. There's techniques that will show you how to grab all four corners or all eight corners of the room. You bring them to the middle, then you ground the middle. Give it a second to, you know, ground the energy out until you're comfortable. Then you set up your space, then you walk in. And that way the room itself is safe for you to walk into.
That would have been very useful.
Those are good tools to have, yes.
I didn't even want to, I guess part of my arrogance too, or just apathy. Because I'm always teaching people it's something you always got to do. But I'm figuring, like, we're in the mountains. It's a candle shop. I mean, I'm on vacation.
Energy's everywhere.
I should have known better. But you know what? I didn't eat for 8 hours after that because my stomach was still doing somersaults and everything. It was a very humbling and useful, I guess, learning tool. Because I came back and I told everybody, see, even I'm going to make the mistake too. So don't do what I do. You know,
did you get a feeling for what the energy was that was in the room that was in the shop that was so ugly?
It wasn't necessarily negative. It was just an overwhelming amount, and it was such a weird. It was up in the mountains, like
if it was good, positive, high level energy, you wouldn't have felt that way. You would have felt euphoric walking in there. So the fact that you wanted to throw up means it was a very low level energy.
Yeah. Well, I know according to their history, it was a biological testing lab at one point in the bottom of this like old, probably like at least close to 100-year-old ski, like chalet up in the mountains. So, because that's kind of their claim to fame now, is that all the biological testing used to happen underneath. As what's,
guess so, it never occurred to them to clean the energy out before before opening a candle shop.
I imagine that can't be all positive in there. So no, it's going to be a little bit of negativity in there, too.
They probably should, if they want to get customers in, they should clean it out. Unless they like it, but yeah.
We deal with the negative cases quite a bit. That's something that more so than regular cases now, me and Marty and some of the other people in my group, we'll tend to do more of those now. And the rest of the group does our normal investigations. But this was beyond what I would normally feel, even on a case that I would know going in is bad. It was enough. I don't usually get, even on those cases, I don't normally have to go take a walk outside to the point where I'm almost feeling like I'm going to need to be crawling outside or tell my wife, hey, you might find me on the floor in a minute or two.
Yeah. Don't mind me. I'm just throwing up.
Yeah, it was very, very intense. It felt like I was in a funnel cloud, in a tornado that caught in the energy. And the way the layout of the place was with being so, like, it had a lot of stuff in there. But it was the rooms were very small, and it wasn't like a normal flow of a normal house. So the energy was really just ricocheting off stuff like a pinball going off from room to room. So you couldn't really, you never knew where it was going to come at you next. It was coming at you at all different directions. Because when I went back in, I went up to the upper floors, I went into all the different rooms, and I was consciously now protecting. But I could feel being bombarded with it. But I was able kind of handle it. But that's not. I can imagine people who were I don't think I was very, very open that day, but someone who's really open and that wasn't aware of it, I mean, they're going to go away, thinking they got food poisoning or the flu.
I wouldn't be surprised. A big headache and they don't feel well, and within 2-3 days they end up with a cold. Sure. Mm-hmm. I say, I don't know why I feel so bad. I just suddenly don't feel very, or gosh, I'm kind of depressed and I don't know why. Everything's fine, and then I got depressed.
To deal with it.
Well, I noticed that the owner, because I was talking to the lady working there, she's there all the time. She has some things happen, but she really just, she has a wall around her that she's putting up because she doesn't want to feel anything. It's like a giant brick wall, and I think she's doing, unintentionally, she's shielding herself. But the owner hardly ever comes in, she said. She stops in here and there. It's like, now I kind of know why,
I can understand that. The person when I first started with ULC, the person I worked with at the other ULC site before I started the seminary, he is what other people have referred to as a psychic vampire. Okay. The entire time that I was dealing with him, I blew out my knee. I had the one and only huge sinus infection I've ever had in my life. I had back-to-back flu. I was sick. It was one thing after another that I was either sick, damaged, or just, feeling awful the entire time. And I went down, to a healer who unfortunately has died, but he is really good. And he explained, he's taking from you. You are not giving to him. He's taking. And I said, and I feel that. And he said, well, let me just put a stop to that. And as soon as he did, I went, it was instantaneous. And my knee cleared up, and my health improved dramatically, and everything changed. And then I went, okay, I'm leaving. I'm starting my own thing. And I stopped almost immediately dealing with him, and he knew it, too. He could feel it. He suddenly got very angry with me and threatening and all kinds of stuff, all because I wouldn't let him suck out my energy anymore. And I just, my health improved tenfold from not having that anymore.
You feel there's a definite correlation between like the psychic energy and physical illness?
Oh, 100%. I had cancer. I'm a cancer survivor. I had Hodgkin's lymphoma when I was 24, and I have the distinction of being the sickest person with Hodgkin's that Stanford Hospital has ever seen, and they specialize in Hodgkin's. I came in a wheelchair. I was rolled in, and they were like, "Wow, you're not going to make it." Well, that was 17 years ago, so 18 years ago, whatever it was, a long time ago. I was at that point part of a fairly large psychic community, and I had people giving me readings left and right and healings, and, you know, and I was doing alternative treatments and all kinds of stuff, and I got all kinds of different answers about why I was sick. And then pretty soon, I peeled away the onion, and everybody said, and I mean everybody, every reading said, it's your mother. You have karma with your mother. It's your mother, it's your mother, it's your mother. And I love my mom. My mom and I, you know, she was a good mom. I went, okay, and I started doing the chemo, and I did get better on the chemo, and I went to a past life reading, and I went, and she says, okay, let's just give it a shot. And I said, well, you know, I'm accustomed to being in trance, so that wasn't a problem, and I dropped right into it. I dropped directly into the past life that I was stuck on with my mom, and I just knew it immediately, and she talked me through the whole process, and she said, can you forgive her for this? And I said, yes, I can, and I gave forgiveness right at that moment, and when I came out, I did not feel any animosity or anything towards my mom, and I haven't ever since. We went from having, you know, fairly normal mother-daughter relationship. Now she's been my best friend ever since, and we don't fight about anything. She doesn't get me on any of those mom things at all, and I managed to have two kids, which I had, I don't know, 25% chance of getting pregnant, and I had no problems and no complications. So it was, absolute miracle.
That is awesome.
It was quite an experience. I learned a lot, and there's a definite correlation.
Because I mean, that's something I've always read about, but I up until I guess, you know, listening to you, I've never met anyone that had like that kind of situation where they can show that it was there's nothing else it could have been.
Oh, there's I can with absolute certainty I can tell you it's related. I know that the one person I had the connection with, I've had a lot of, the one I said back east, we had a lot of past lives. And when I first met him, he came to my attention. And that time when I met him, I blew out my knee. And the next time I saw him, I saw him a year later at another event. And when he saw me, he had a flare-up of MS, which he hadn't had one since he was 16. And this was some of the karma that we had together. And I think the third time I saw him, I got cellulitis, which is common for having lymphedema, but I've never had it before. And I had my whole leg inflamed. And so after that, I went and got a reading, and it resolved. You know, he says, oh, you guys have this, and this exchanged. And he said, let me just fix that for you. And he fixed it. And then I saw him again, I don't know, a year or two after that, and it was completely normal. We were like two old friends. I mean, I've only seen him a few times in my life, but we were like old friends, and neither one of us were injured or sick. And it was one of the readings that I got when I got the healing was, he said, well, you in past life, you two were together, and you were stoned for being together, and that's why your knee blew out, is you were hit with rocks. And I thought, well, that makes sense. Because it's just all these weird happenstances, and so I'm absolutely certain that it's all related.
Well, we're gonna have to have you on again. We've run to the end of our time here, but we've opened up a whole other
can
of worms
so much more
here
now.
With this all these other questions. So we'll definitely have to schedule you to come back on again.
Oh, I would love to, because that body mind connection, boy, I could talk all day on that. There's so much stuff that's there that all goes together.
Thank you for
everything
you do, and thank you for the ULC seminar, because it's changed my life.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for being a part of it. You add a lot to it, and it's all appreciated.
All right. Take care, Amy.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. We're going to see you next week. We're going to have Frank Lazario on, and probably a roundtable of a bunch of local researchers. Some with some more philosophical questions.
There you go.
Take care. See you next week.